Welcome to the Meat and Poultry Podcast. This podcast is your online portal to hear from experts in the industry about the latest news, trends, technologies, and people in the world of meat and poultry processing.
The Open Prairie Natural Meats brand brings the best in natural meats, and their team is dedicated to helping you find solutions. As a trusted supplier, you can count on consistency and flexibility. Their never ever beef and pork come in various packaging formats, plus an expert team who knows your category and the customers. See why there's no better solution than the Open Prairie brand. Get in touch with a sales representative and visit openprairiemeats.com for more. For the Meat Poultry Podcast, I'm Ryan McCarthy, digital media editor. Lance Zimmerman, the senior beef analyst at Rabo AgriFinance, wants to share his experience looking at the cattle industry with the entire beef supply chain. During our conversation for the Meat and Poultry Podcast, Lance describes why the move to Rabo AgriFinance was the right one for his career. Previously, he worked for nearly 12 years at Cattle Facts. At the beginning, we also discuss his background of being a Kansas rancher and how it helps him during his analysis on a daily basis. Next, Lance dives into some topics that are affecting the cattle industry, including supply chain issues, identifying consumer demands, and drought conditions in the Midwest. Lance also discusses in detail what feed costs could look like for the rest of 2022 and how well the U.S. is trading with other countries. Finally, we return to why Lance enjoys this job and what he hopes to bring to the table in the future at Rabobank. Take a listen.
Well, I just wanted to start out there, Lance. Congratulations on the new job. And what made it the right place to be at Rabo AgriFinance for you now?
Yeah, I feel very blessed, very fortunate to have worked for some great companies in the livestock space, in the beef industry when it comes to my time at Cattle Facts, which I left to move here and come to Rabo AgriFinance, my time at Certified Angus Beef. And so when you think about good companies, growth opportunities, this was a very logical progression to come here and be a part of the Rabo Ag research team. What's really neat about this company is they are focused on researchers from literally production agriculture, cow-calf operations, all the way to the consumer and logistics and processing and cattle feeding and everything in between. And so you get a great opportunity, not just within the cattle space, to work with some really great experts, some really great clients, but you get to do it across the entire ag space. There's about 20 of those folks on the research team here in North America. And then there's about 75 of those folks globally. And so getting the chance to be the cattle and beef lead, to supervise those efforts, to lead the research in that area and help the industry, help Rabo AgriFinance in those areas was pretty exciting.
Definitely. Yeah, tell us a little bit about your background with the cattle market, how you got into it. I know you mentioned you've been at Cattle Facts for a while, but when did that start becoming a passion for you to be working on the cattle market specifically?
Yeah, what's great is, as I think with a lot of folks in the cattle business, I grew up in it. I grew up in a farm and ranch background in Western Kansas, kind of a unique story. My dad rebuilt the family farm pretty much from scratch in the late 70s, in through the 80s and 90s as I was a kid. And typical to a lot of folks in the livestock and ag industries, had some 4-H, had some FFA experience. And I think really when numbers started clicking for me was in undergraduate school when I was at Kansas State University, but I didn't fully get it then. My first career actually was in marketing communications and doing industry information work for Certified okay. Angus Beef. I always had a passion for cattle, but after I worked there about 5 years full-time, after 3 years as a college student, decided I want to go back and get my master's degree. So I got a master's in ag econ. Then I spent 12 years at Cattle Facts and worked my way through the ranks there before this opportunity came along. And it seemed like something that myself and my family thought was a great opportunity for us.
how much does that help having the farming, ranching, cattle background when you're doing all this analysis a lot of times? Tell me a little bit about that too. And I think I saw something where you still are involved somewhat in your own farm. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, definitely. What's really interesting about the protein business in the United States is specifically to cattle. I do think that there is some benefit in growing up in it and understanding the cycle and the seasonalities that come with being in the cattle business. I think also there's merit to understanding, you know, what's unique about the cattle business is that the average size of the cow-calf operation in the U.S. is basically 40 to 50 head. Well, that's not enough to really provide a full-time income for anyone. If you think about the long-run historical returns over the last, let's just say, 10 years for cow-calf producers, it's probably around $100 per mama cow. So even if you had 500 head, you're maybe earning over the long run $50,000 a year. That's a pretty skinny income to raise a family on. And so you have an industry that at its very foundation is built with small operators. And I think that that's a stark contrast to any of the other protein industries in the United States. Obviously, we think about pork and poultry, much more commercialized. Aquaculture is in the same boat. And so when it comes to beef and cattle, at the end of the day, I think that business is much more relational and it flows from the cow-calf operation all the way through the segments. And so that's clearly been a benefit. You mentioned the family farming operation. My brother's 8 years younger than me. Oftentimes we talk about, hey, you know, I helped build it up as a young kid growing up through junior high, high school, helping out in college. My brother being 8 years younger than me, really has seen it as it's been in its more mature state over time and really grown it to what it is today. A lot of technology, mostly a grain operation today, wheat, corn, Milo, but we do have about 200 head of mama cows as well, and do a backgrounding operation there in Western Kansas. So I get back and help during all the busy times, weaning, harvest, anytime there's a need for a helping hand, try to get back there. Making a family deal, helping with my brother, our hired man, and my son's old enough now that he's doing ride-alongs and helping out as well. So that makes it fun.
Good deal. Yeah, it's always interesting to hear that perspective too when you're out there and very involved with everything that's going on with agriculture too. Lance,
yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to move on a little bit. Just looking at the cattle market in general, we all know it's been challenging the last few years and things like that, but What's kind of been your look at it over the last summer and going into this summer now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously growing up in the business, there have been periods of uncertainty, periods of volatility throughout my entire time being exposed to the industry. But the uniqueness of the volatility that's faced cattle producers really since summer of 2019 has been exceptional. You know, we had a major plant fire in 2019. The pandemic hit us in 20. We were still kind of going through the ripple effects and the growing pains of that all through last year. And while I think we've somewhat come to a new normal in 2022, it's been a new subset of challenges, right? Instead of market volatility and uncertainty, really it started last year and it's continued through this year. It's been weather risk. And as we look at it last year, the big discussion points were the entire western third of the U.S., the Pacific Northwest, all the way through the northern plains. This year, you still have challenges in the western third of the U.S. and the Pacific Northwest. But now the south central plains has really been getting hit hard. And when you think about where our core cattle businesses, those mom and pop cow calf producers, it really starts down in that eastern third of Texas, that corridor that basically runs from San Antonio up through that region in between Dallas, all the way up through Osage grass country of Oklahoma, the Flint Hills of Kansas, and over into Missouri. You look at June and June precipitation from that region of the country, and they basically got 10% of their normal precip for the month of June. That's a lot of major cow-calf country that's been hit hard by drought. And that's where the heart of our cow-calf segment really resides. And so as we think about that, that's chief on my mind in terms of understanding we've gone through a really tough business climate the last several years. for the cow-calf producer trickles all the way up to stocker operators and feed yards.
Yeah.
Now, weather's really dealt a second blow to a lot of those folks. And so helping them understand and have good information to make solid business decisions, helping them understand that, yes, we're going through a really trying time. These weather events seem to be more volatile. How do we manage our operations to adjust to that? But also, how do we make sure that they have the cash necessary to manage those operations and do what they need to make sure they have the economic viability to keep surviving as multi-generation farms and ranches.
We will be right back after a short break. The Open Prairie Natural Meats brand is the better solution for all your natural meats needs. Whether you need sales-boosting marketing solutions, expert advice, data-driven consumer insights, or more, the Open Prairie team has your back every step of the way. Not to mention in-demand, never-ever beef and pork in both traditional boxed and case-ready formats. Reach out to a sales representative and visit openprairiemeats.com for more.
Yeah, and I was wondering how that all fits in, because you covered quite a bit there with your job as an analyst. How do you break it down for not only what Rabobank needs, but when people need this information too from you?
Yeah, that's a really unique part of this entire position that I'm filling today. My title's research, and that means I have a lot of different customers that I have to service, right?
Yeah.
I have the core Rabo AgriFinance rural bankers and their customers and the industry to serve as large. And I think that part is very easy probably for a lot of your viewers, your listeners to understand and digest day to day. But then there's also a component of working with the wholesale banking side and helping them have the information they need to make informed business decisions for Rabo AgriFinance and Rabo Bank as a whole. And then there's also the component of just continually being out in front of the media and doing things like this, just talking to folks, talking through complex issues and being another voice, another trusted advisor that anyone can lean on, whether they're a cow-calf producer, whether they're maybe a food service operator, maybe they're a restaurateur or even a retail meat manager. And understanding what those different aspects of the industry are and how they can manage their business better based on the information we can provide. So when you look at this position, I think you almost become a Swiss Army knife of sorts, and you break out different tools and different resources depending on what your audience needs.
And for your job as an analyst, can you kind of help gauge consumer interest in a lot of these different things that cattle producers are looking at and how the rest of the supply chain is kind of going to react to whatever you're doing researching with the cattle? Take us through a little bit about that, of how you're looking at it, not only at the beginning, but then to the grocery store, to the consumer as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the great things about the team we have assembled, the research team we have assembled, is we have those consumer experts that we can lean on and the data sets available to us to make sure we make sound decisions there. And when you think about what's going on from a consumer standpoint, it's got a lot of layers to that onion. Of course, the big picture consumer we all think about, especially in the beef industry, is the U.S. consumer, because 85% of our beef is consumed right here in the United States. So we think about the inflationary pressures that are affecting U.S. consumers today, higher interest rates. When we talk about beef, we know that the U.S. consumer loves high-quality beef, high-quality grain-fed beef, prime and high-choice marbled product, and that's very much so what's helped the beef industry grow demand a lot over the last 25 to 30 years. The challenge is when you face a recession, when you face inflationary pressures, what you really got to think about is not the main consumer in the same way. You really got to think about the consumer in two steps. That there's kind of your middle to high income consumers that will probably continue on their day to day just fine. Then there's those middle income to low income consumers where we often call, and you hear it talked about in mainstream media, that inflation's a tax on the poor. Inflation affects those lower income earners disproportionately more than the higher income ones. When we think about that as a beef and cattle producer, that means ground beef, which in reality, the US consumer consumes about 60% of all their beef as ground beef, but that percentage increases a lot more when we talk about middle to low income consumers. And so what is that price point where that consumer really pushes back? And not even that, what is that price point relative to cheaper alternatives, pork and poultry? Coming out of the recession, pork and poultry increased at a far faster rate in terms of their price at retail than beef. And so we got some insulated, we had some insulation that kept that price shock from being real. But as we go forward, we got to be sensitive to that and make sure that as cattle producers, we're watching to make sure beef is still staying price competitive in the retail meat case, and obviously on restaurant and food service menus too.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, everything that's going on inflation-wise, trying to figure out what's going on with this economy. Can you also talk a little bit about the issues with feed, with everything going on right now too? It's the, and it stems from so many different areas around the world, I guess, too, when it comes to something like cattle. Can you kind of take our audience through of all the other events that have happened around the world and how that kind of has affected everything when it comes to feed?
Oh, man. Yeah. And that's one of the biggest things that I think is important for us to realize as cattle and beef producers in the U.S. is that, you know, you have pork that 25% of pork production is going overseas, and a similar amount of poultry. Beef at only 15% of our market share, our production share going overseas is considerably less. But that pales in comparison to even what it would have been a few years ago. We are 15% today. You know, we were talking high single digits to low 10, 11% area just a few years ago. And so we've really grown the market share of what percentage of our beef goes overseas. Then you layer in the fact that we also are at risk of all these other global factors from an input cost perspective, to your point.
Yeah.
It seems like as soon as the calendar year flipped to 2022, even more so than you saw in the previous year, input costs kept ratcheting higher while the beef price was just stagnant and the cattle price was just stagnant. Well, we have finally in the last 30 days or so finally seen some of these input costs correct, especially if you're a feedlot selling fat cattle or you're a processor selling beef. Usually those prices roll seasonally lower into what we call the dog days of summer. They've actually held together very well, almost tracking perfectly sideways. While corn prices, wheat prices, bean prices have come under some pressure. And I think some of that's due to the fact that the market has just a little bit more certainty around them in terms of what those global supplies and U.S. supplies of grains are going to be. But also, I think those markets realize that some of the prices that we shot to, those absolute levels and absolute highs earlier this year, probably did a good job of bringing demand to the forefront, rationing demand for some of those goods. Markets are always anticipatory, right? Especially in the futures markets for commodities. And so those price increases early priced in a situation that allowed us to navigate through probably the next 6 to 12 months and get some of those grain and feed supplies, fuel supplies, a little bit more manageable and in line with demand.
Right. And I'm sure it's, and it makes something like that makes it really difficult to forecast then for 2022, especially with what's going on in Ukraine. Regardless of what happens here, you know, in the U.S., it's that can still have such a factor on whatever's happening in the world, even if we've got our ducks in a row here at the United States.
Yeah. And I think the other thing to realize is you have all these big macroeconomic things, factors that you have to keep in mind. We talked about it, global uncertainty, inflation, recession risk. But at the end of the day, you still have a market in the U.S. that also has to keep in mind its fundamentals. And when we talk about fundamentals for the uninitiated, just basic supply and demand. And as we look at what's happened in this market, yes, the U.S. beef cow herd has been liquidating since 2019. But the reality is we will kill a fed steer and heifer population that is almost identical this year to last year. And last year's was the largest since 2019. And And so as we think about that, it almost makes you question, okay, when is the industry going to finally realize these 3+ years of cow herd contraction? And I think when you have a major global pandemic layered on top of a major drought, we started this 3+ year period backing cattle up because we couldn't get them through processing plants fast enough. Then we finally worked through a lot of those carryover and supply chain issues at the processing segment, and then got hit with Mother Nature that forced us to liquidate cows and get them off of grass quickly and into feed yards. And so we really drew into that available supply and packed those feed yards full again. And now we're finally getting to a point where I think as we navigate through this summer, fall, and winter, we're going to realize a period of time where finally those supplies from a beef production standpoint, from a steer and heifer slaughter standpoint, are going to show significant enough year-over-year declines that even if demand is softer, even if there is a little bit of global uncertainty, the underlying supply will be small enough that that alone can support prices, even if some of those other factors would typically mean softer market prices, all else equal.
Lance, you mentioned export only being 15% for the beef market coming out of the U.S., but do you still see that in the future, people wanting to get more American beef, more U.S. beef around the world, and having a chance to grow a little bit more in the future?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's amazing when you think about the opportunity that exists for U.S. beef is some of the traditional thought processes of what we think would be our demand growth sources have matured. You know, the U.S. market, while there's opportunities to continue to grow that pie with higher quality beef, with just better understanding of the U.S. consumer and better tailoring our product to their tastes and desires, the real growth opportunities for U.S. cattle producers are overseas, because that's where income can grow the most. And I think through the early 2000s and early parts of 2010, you talked a lot about beef export growth in Japan. Well, Japan's a maturing market now, too, much like the U.S. is a mature beef market. The income growth is pretty flat there now. The demographic from an age standpoint is pretty mature. And so when we look at our growth markets today overseas, China remains a huge market. Yeah. With the income growth that they're seeing there, clearly a major population center. South Korea as well. But even as we look at year-to-date beef exports, even if you chalk those two major markets off the list and kind of look at the remainder of the top 10, the rest of the top 10 today is facing a lot of uncertainty with what's going on geopolitically and globally. Where the big growth is actually happening is a lot of those smaller countries outside of the top 10. And so it's really fascinating to see that, to understand that. It's also very fascinating to see and understand what type of products we're exporting today. You would typically sit back and think, well, maybe it's some whole muscle cuts, maybe it's some chuck items, some round items. And those are certainly traditional items and part of the mix. But starting last year, when China really became an aggressive U.S. beef buyer, they were buying a lot of 50% lean trimmings, 65% lean trimmings, and obviously a lot of the lesser items, what we would call the variety meat items, tongues, stomachs, things of that nature, and adding a lot of value back to the beef carcass, the beef animal, and those values, while today probably aren't trickling fully down to the cow-calf producer because we haven't fully realized those tighter supplies. When we do finally get the fed supply and beef production in balance with that cow herd, those additional values that have been derived to that end product value, that wholesale value, will find that they trickle those dollars much more so back downstream, back to the cow-calf producer.
Sounds good. Lance, just a couple more. I wanted to ask you real quick, just more about your job being a senior beef analyst. And what do you enjoy most about it? Is it just covering such a wide variety of topics in the industry? What do you enjoy most about it on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. One of the things that I've always said, whether it was at my time at Certified Angus Beef, my time at Cattle Facts, or here, you get the opportunity to be a teacher, right? I find joy in being able to take very complex systems, very complex interactions, and be able to distill them down into a bite-sized message that people can better understand. Markets are not easy to understand. And anybody who says they got it figured out is probably lying to you. And so taking the time to be able to just step back and observe kind of the forest from the trees and vice versa, and being able to take a concept and approach it from a 30,000 foot level, but then bring it down and make it local so that somebody can understand, yeah, oh, this is how this interaction at a very big picture, distant from me level comes all the way back and does affect me and does influence my operation. And not only that, but then give them the tools to understand, okay, this is what you can do to make that an opportunity for you. Or this is what you can do to take this large perceived industry threat and minimize your exposure to it as an operation. And so that's really what I enjoy, is not just being able to distill down that concept, but then give practical advice on what they can do to take that and make meaningful change for their operations. Because again, sustainability, it's a huge buzzword today, obviously. And the folks smarter than me in that area kind of distill it down into three areas, right? It's economical, it's environmental, and it's social. And when I think about the economic side of it, a big part of it is just thinking about how the U.S. beef industry at its foundation, like I said, at that small cow-calf level, every one of those businesses, for the most part, is a multi-generational family-owned business. And so if we can give them tools that carry that generationally spanning family operation into the next generation and into the next generation after that, we've done our job, right? We've preserved the heritage and future that this industry has been built on for generations to come. And that part of the work really excites me, the educational component of it and giving folks tangible things that they can do to help improve what they do day to day.
Yeah. And just to end on a positive note, we've talked a lot about the challenges. Is that kind of an area of looking at the multi-generational family-owned places and making sure they succeed? Is that kind of what excites you and keeps you optimistic about everything a lot of times?
It does. I mean, when you think about the markets, when you think about the industry, it's easy, especially in my line of work, right, to get lost in the numbers, to get lost in the black and white aspects of this business. At the end of the day, this business is very much operating in a gray area, right? We all understand the black and white, but day to day, you're fixing fence that broke and the cattle that got out. You're fixing the trailer that got a flat tire. You have a tractor that broke down that you got to go spend some time on. You have a kid you got to run to soccer camp or baseball game. Life's messy, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But what's really cool about this business is at the end of the day, we're all called to be stewards, right? Stewards of what was given to us, that family farm, those livestock, that crop, that family, your spouse. And so when I think about what excites me most about this role and my day to day is I'm helping everybody be a better steward. And that's a really high calling as an American farmer or rancher. And so when I can take a very a job that seems very mundane to a lot of folks, maybe sterile to a lot of folks, but build it out in a way that makes them better stewards, regardless of their role in the industry, cow-calf producer, feedlot operator, processor, merchandiser, then I'm doing my job, right? Whether it's something as simple as making you a better cow-calf producer or helping you as a restaurant eliminate some food waste and being more aware of what that means to your bottom line. At the end of the day, I'm helping everybody be more responsible with everything we've been given. And that's a pretty high calling when we think about our customers in that light.
Well, Lance, we really appreciate you joining us. We got some great information and analysis to get us started, and good luck with the rest of the year now at Rabo AgriFinance. Appreciate it and good luck with everything.
Hey, thank you for the time today. Hopefully I offered you some things that help your viewers and listeners, and appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Mm-hmm. Make sure to check out the latest stories from the monthly print edition and online at meatpoultry.com. Also follow us on social media at Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, all by searching at Meat Poultry. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a rating and a review. It really helps us. All right, that's it for this time, folks. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.